Now we come to the lecture of the 14th of October, 1917. Rudolf Steiner starts by suggesting that it is necessary that one permit certain fundamental truths of spiritual development to always appear again and again for a person's soul, in order that one is able to take in new material and to permeate these fundamental truths in a better way. I've often indicated how in the middle of the 19th century, particularly in the 40s, a significant turning point occurred in the spiritual development of the European and American mankind. I indicated that at that time there was a high point of the materialistic intellectual development, the high point for the development of that which one could call an intellectual grasping of the external dead facts, a grasping which did not want to enter into living facts. Events which are occurring today stand under the afterworking of these events. Events which have their deeper fundament in processes of the spiritual world. And when we research those processes in the spiritual world which found their external expression in what we have indicated, so must we point towards a battle, a kind of battle in the spiritual world which began at that time, and as far as the spiritual world was concerned, in a certain sense had its conclusion in that particular point of time of which I have often indicated, namely in the autumn of the year 1879. You will be able to create a correct idea about these things if you would think of the fact that there was a battle in the spiritual worlds which lasted for decades, from the 40s till the autumn of 1879. The battle which occurred then can be described as a battle of spiritual beings who are the followers of that being out of the hierarchy of the archangel, which one can designate as Michael. A battle of Michael and his followers against certain Ahrimanic forces. And you must imagine this battle. You must know that this battle is a battle in the spiritual world. And everything which I am talking about now relates to this battle between Michael and his followers and certain Ahrimanic forces. You'll be able to understand much that is happening in the life of the present time when you will focus in mind the fact that those human souls who precisely were born in the 40s of the 19th century had participated in the first phases of this battle between Michael and his followers and the Ahrimanic forces, this battle occurring in the spiritual world. So we can say that those people who were born in the 40s of the 19th century have participated and noticed and recorded and seen the fact that as souls, before their birth, they saw the beginning of this spiritual battle. If you take this into consideration, then you will acquire much understanding for the external and inner experiences of destiny of such people, particularly for the soul configuration of such people. Thus, this battle occurred in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s of the 19th century and concluded in autumn of 1879 by the fact that Michiel and his followers have achieved a victory over certain Ahrimanic forces. Now, what does that signify? What does it mean? Now, you see, you can understand this in a correct way if we will take for help the picture which has been maintained throughout the evolution of mankind, the picture of the battle of Michael with the dragon. Naturally, there occurs the battle of Michael with the dragon at various places in evolution. You come across this battle of Michael with the dragon at a number of places in human evolution. You can characterize it in a way that every time when such a battle of Michael with the dragon occurs, this battle takes its this battle occurs, plays itself out in a similar way as in the 40s of the 19th century, however, in reference to varying objectives, varying dangers, the certain Ahrimanic hosts ever again, time and time again, attempt to incorporate into world evolution sometimes this thing, sometimes that thing, and they are always conquered, they're always defeated, and so they have been defeated in the autumn of 1879, however, as we said, defeated within the spiritual world. However, what does it signify that the forces of the dragon, these Ahrimanic hosts, were pushed down from heaven upon earth into the domain of human beings? This defeat signifies that these Ahrimanic hosts, that the Ahrimanic forces, biblically speaking, can no longer be found in the heavens, and instead of that, they are to be found in the kingdom of human beings. And this means that the end of the 70s of the 19th century are a time in which the human souls were particularly taken hold of by certain forces of cognition permeated by Ahrimanic impulses. Because earlier these Ahrimanic impulses were able to activate themselves in the spiritual realms, they left human beings in peace. But because they have been ejected, thrown down, out of the spiritual kingdoms, they have come among human beings. And if we ask ourselves what actually was entered out of the spiritual realms as Ahrimanic forces into human beings, so you must say that what entered is the personally colored Ahrimanic materialistic world conception, I want you to realize, to emphasize the fact that I said the personally colored Ahrimanic materialistic world conception. Certainly, in the high point of materialism was present in the 1840s, but this sent its impulses more instinctively into mankind. The Ahrimanic hosts at that time, they sent their impulses from out of the spiritual world into human instincts. It was only since the autumn of 1879 that these Ahrimanic impulses became a personal characteristic of man. They entered personally into the cognitive forces of man and into the will forces of man. That which previously was more allgemein gemut, something of a general universal property, then, as after 1879, was actually implanted into the Eigentum, into the quality of the individual. And so we are able to say that since the year 1879, because of the presence of Ahrimanic forces in the kingdom of humanity, of human beings, one could say that personal ambition, it was a personal tendency to interpret the world in a materialistic way. Before 1879, formally, these Ahrimanics from the spiritual world could send impulses into human instincts and feelings, but these instincts and feelings were more of a general nature. But when they were cast down into the physical world, they could actively enter into individuals, into single individuals, and shape their cognitive powers and will forces. Formerly, Ahriman could send down forces from the spiritual world into humanity, from the spiritual world. Now he could actually take up residence in the human souls. Darwin could carry out research in an Ahrimanic manner, but he still thought and acted as a deist. But however, when you compare Haeckel and Nietzsche, you have a more personal element. They produced Ahrimanic world conceptions. All this is the result of the casting down of the dragon, which means the hosts of Ahriman, that the archangel Michael cast down the Ahrimanic hosts from the kingdom of the spirit, from the heavens. He cast them down, right down to the earth. This is a process of the utmost significance. The 19th century, and even our time, today we don't have the inclination to be able to take heed of such processes which occur in the spiritual world and how they affect the physical world. But the ultimate causative force, the ultimate foundations, the ultimate reasons, the ultimate impulse, the ultimate impulses for events upon the earth, one can only find and understand when you know the spiritual backgrounds. That which can be understood as the deepest impulses living in the souls of many men since the year 1879, that were formerly lived as an Ahrimanic force in the spiritual world, and then it was thrown down into the kingdoms of man. It is of advantage when you look for other ideas which are able to strengthen these ideas. And this is good when you use imaginative symbolical ideas. Imaginative symbolical ideas which are taken out of the physical material world. Since that which today occurs in a more spiritual way, occurs in a more soulish way, this has had in all primal times a coloration which expressed itself much more on the material domain. The materiella, the material aspect, is also spiritual. It is just another form of the spiritual. If you go back into very old times of evolution, then you will find that a similar battle had occurred between Michael and the dragon, which I have now depicted for you as happening in the 19th century. I have indicated that such battles repeat themselves time and time again, but they dealt with other things. In the ancient times, there also occurred once that the Ahrimanic hosts lost such a battle, and they were also at that time thrown down from the spiritual world into the earthly realm. But nevertheless, again and again, they attempt their onslaughts. For example, there was such a battle which occurred, as a result of which these Ahrimanic hosts, after they had been thrown down upon the earth, brought into the populations of the earth that which today has been designated by medicine as the bacilli. Everything which you can point to as the forces of bacilli, Bacillen Kräfte, in which these Bacillen, these bacilli, have take some part, that is a consequence of the fact that once upon a time the Ahrimanic hosts were thrown down from heaven upon the earth. That the dragon was conquered, as is a consequence of such a victory against the Ahrimanic Mephistophelic way of thinking, which had seized hold since the end of the 1870s. As a result of the 1870s, the Ahrimanic Mephistophely way of thinking has taken hold of people on the earth, just as previously on the material domains you have tuberculosis, tubercle, and bacilli illnesses. Just as today's intellectual materialism is on the soul spiritual domain. These two things belong to each other in a higher sense. We can compare the processes of the last century with something else. We can indicate to that which you have already known out of the book Occult Science, namely the withdrawal of the moon out of the realm of earth development. Once upon a time, the moon belonged to the earth. It was then cast out of the earth. This casting out of the moon out of the earth realm, that indicates the taking hold of by certain moon influences. These moon influences came up over the earth as a consequence of such a victory of Michael over the dragon. So that one can again say, everything which is connected with certain effects which go parallel with the phases of the moon, in the main, those impulses which proceed from the moon upon the earth, all that has its origin in a similar battle of Michael with the dragon. Certain people have an irresistible force, attraction, to intellectual materialism, because this attraction is a result of their personal union with the cast-down Ahriman. Gradually, they begin to love the impulses which Ahriman sets up in their soul, and they consider it, regard it as something elevated, as a particular height in their way of thinking. In reference to all this, one must be quite clear that a certain kind of danger is threatening mankind from that side. And this danger consists in the fact that that is being conserved which ought not to be conserved. Everything which occurs in the ordering of the world has, namely, also something good in it. We are able to acquire for ourselves, win for ourselves, a definite possession, a definite part, a definite quantity of human freedom through the fact that the Ahrimanic forces have been pushed down into us through the victory of Michael. We must be consciously aware of the fact that in all of us, these hosts of Ahriman have sailed in. And because of that, we can win for ourselves a quantity of human freedom. But to do this, we must be consciously aware of it. We must not therefore permit the Ahrimanic forces to have the upper hand over us. We mustn't fall in love with these Ahrimanic forces. This is very important, because there is absolutely the danger that mankind may hold themselves fast in this attachment to materialism, to sink into a materialistic Ahrimanic way of thinking and to carry it out or to extend it into times in which the real factor is that this materialistic Ahrimanic thinking should be overcome. People who, with their materialistic Ahrimanic thinking, undergo a certain union with the Ahrimanic forces, they will not be able to continue with the spiritual progress of human earth development, but only with the material progress. And as a result of their union with Ahriman, at a certain point of time in the sixth post-Atlantean period, they will find exclusive happiness and pleasure in living in what will then arrive at the world as bacilli. They will get their happiness through attachment to these bacilli, these small microscopic enemies of the human being. Now, we must also add to such things other things which we must understand. We must understand that the natural scientific way of thinking is in the strong danger, through its own logical consequence, indeed precisely through its greatness, its great successes, to also to sail into this Ahrimanic way of thinking. Not only the moral way of thinking, but also the natural scientific way of thinking is very strongly in the danger of sailing into this Ahrimanic materialistic way of thinking. Now just review how certain natural scientists develop themselves or carry or think in the realm of geology. They study the configuration of the surface of the earth, and they follow the residues which I've been left behind in the several layers by certain animals. And one discovers certain facts which one attaches to certain periods of time. And as a result of that, these natural scientists form for themselves the opinion how things were so many thousand and million years ago. And they also build the Kant-Laplace theory of the primal nebel, the primal cloud. And then they also develop certain concepts about the later conditions of Earth development, which will come in the future, which, according to the physical viewpoint, are quite right. Such ideas are in many cases extraordinary, very, very correct. But upon what do such ideas rest upon? They rest upon the fact that one has observed the development of the Earth following a certain period of time, and then they draw conclusions of what's going to happen millions of years later on. Millions of years before certain things can happen, therefore millions of years later on other things will happen, quite logically. Now actually, what are they really doing? They're doing just the same as if, for example, one can observe a child, 7, 8 years, 9 years old. And one examines how the various organs develop themselves and change. And as a result of those facts, one would then calculate out how such organs will change in the course of 2, 3 years. And then they can logically draw conclusions how the child will be 8, 9, and then also how he's going to change in the course of centuries. You can also reckon out how the child looked 100 years ago, and then reckon out how he will look 100 years in the future. You can see, the fact is the child didn't exist 100 years ago, and he won't exist 100 years in the future. This is a method, it's quite clever. And it's exactly the same method which the geologists apply in order to calculate out primal times. And they've used that in order to call the Kant-Laplace theory into life. Actually, according to our research, the Earth arose much later than the times which Tyndall or Huxley or Haeckel think calculate out. And the Earth will be a corpse long before the time that these geologists estimate. You see, all these hypotheses about the beginning and the end of the Earth are actually foolishness, in spite of the fact that they have been arrived at through a very high-developed intellectual investigation. From all this, you can deduce how in the main, mankind's ideas are developed in a sort of realm of unconsciousness. But now we are in the time when we must be able to see into the reality behind all these things. Also, it is necessary that we can unite these ideas with other ideas which we have today characterized. The Earth will become a corpse, and then we will develop into a much more spiritual existence. We will no longer seek upon such an earth the fleshly incarnations which we seek today. However, those people who have so united themselves with their materialistic understanding, they will not be able to release themselves. They will, in a future configuration, still crawl about upon this earth. and have their activities in connection with that which then most particularly will develop upon this earth in the deeds of bacilli, tuberculi. Because it's these bacilli and tuberculi which will belong to the corpse of the earth. These bacilli and tuberculi are, I could say, prophecies of what will occur over the whole earth in the future. The Schlacke Leichnam geworden ist mit dem Monde zusammen umgeben. Now translate this word for word because I can't understand it. And the earth, when it has become a corpse, with the moon together, surround. They will surround the earth with the moon. Ah, he means they will unite themselves, I believe, with the earth forces, no, the moon forces, and they will, and the moon will surround the earth when the earth has become a corpse, and they'll unite themselves with the moon. That's the best I can do. You can get your own idea on that. But it's difficult for me to take in this sentence. Because my picture so far, again from Rudolf Steiner, is that in future the moon that we see up there will spiritualize itself and unite with the earth. Oh, is it possible then that in the future, when he talks about the moon uniting with the earth, he doesn't mean the moon up there that we see now, that a spiritualized moon will unite with a spiritualized earth, and then what's left of the moon will go round the corpse of the earth, and these materialistic people unite themselves with the moon. This is my guessing and speculation. Rothschild considers, since these beings, these humans who want to unite themselves with the materialistic intellect, they want nothing else but to hold on to the life of the earth, to remain united with the life of the earth, and not in the correct way to rise up from the corpse of the earth to that which will then be the soul spiritual of the earth. It is very necessary for us to understand these things. I have not, without reason, said that under quite special relationships those people stand who have participated in the beginning of the battle of the 1840s. Then they incarnated upon the earth, and one understands much of the soul life of such people, particularly when they are spiritually striving people, will understand a great deal of their doubts and their battles when one takes into consideration what they have taken in as an impulse out of the spiritual life of the 1840s into the second half of the 19th century and into the beginning of the 20th century. Now there's still another phenomenon that is connected with this, a phenomenon which today should not be overlooked, but which is overlooked very much. As you know, today it is believed that spiritual beings and their workings have no part in the human ordering. One doesn't love to talk about spiritual causes in the happenings of mankind. However, the person who knows about the actual processes which are playing themselves out today, he knows that soul workings in, spiritual workings proceed out of the spiritual world upon human beings here upon the physical plane, and today are exercised in a very strong circumference. If only I could tell you how often human beings, through a dream or something similar to a dream, it's always a spiritual phenomenon, is driven towards this or that activity, to this or that process, much more than is believed by the materialistic opinion, are people today driven by such a psychish and soulish working in? The person who has the opportunity to research these things finds on every step and tread such things. You take the poetically, the literature of the better poems of today, and would put up a statistics how many poems have arisen on a rationalistic way, upon a way which can be explained rationalistic, and how many poems are arisen through an Eingebung, an inspiration, through a significant spiritual influence out of the spiritual world, when the person in question experienced it as a dream or something similar. You'd be astounded when you will realize what a high percentage of those come as a result of the direct influence out of the spiritual world. And precisely, significant occurrences which are executed through human beings occur under the influence of the spiritual world. You may ask here and there, why is this or that newspaper being established? The person established it because he had this or that impulse out of the spiritual world. And as a matter of fact, the most important things which occurred in the year 1914 occurred under the influence of the spiritual world. Well, you must understand that these things occur psychically, which means in a periodic way. And that which occurs here upon the physical plane is actually a kind of projection, a kind of abschattung, shadowing forth of that which occurs in the spiritual world. Only that which occurs in the spiritual world occurs earlier. Let's say we're considering a spiritual event, namely the battle of Michael with the dragon, Michael with the dragon. That occurs in the first place as an event in the spiritual world. It finishes itself through the fact that the dragon is thrown out of the heavens upon the earth. But this shows itself upon the earth that a cycle is completed. Which means, approximately at the same point, after the event which occurred at the time when the dragon was thrown down upon the earth, you get so much a distance before as a point afterwards. In other words, you use the 1879 as a center point, and you go to 1849, and then you take 1879 minus 1841, you get 38 years. Then you add 38 years to 1879, you get 1917. So the events which occur in 1917 as an earthly occurrence are a direct reflection of the spiritual events which occurred in 1841. Again, the events that started in 1841 received their maximum intensity in 1845. From 1845 to 1879, you have 34 years. Add 34 to 1879, that's the reflected event, you have the year 1913-1914. But you see that those exertions which were resulting for the conflict with the Ahrimanic forces in 1841 above there in the spiritual world, they reflect themselves precisely in the year 1917. You understand the events of the physical plane only when you know that they prepare themselves in the spiritual worlds. We're saying these things not in order to cause you all sorts of unrest, in order that you don't sleep through the events. Please note, Rudolf Steiner is giving this lecture in the year October 1917. And Rudolf Steiner continues, it's essential in this particular year upon our anthroposophical domain to heed again and again the words that Wachsamkeit, being awake, is necessary achtsamkeit, to take heed of that which occurs, in order that you don't allow the events to occur and you sleep through them. I've already indicated to you how in the east of Europe the consequences have to be drawn out of such processes. When one here in the West will want to be able to learn something out of external things, what actually lives in the East European soul, then the best means for doing this is to create ourselves an Einblick, a glance into the... You study the philosopher Soloviev in order to get an Einblick into the soul of the East. But it will this power, this Einblick will only be very will be very lacking, will be very insufficient. But to get a real Einblick, you'd have to study the destination of the Russian folk spirit. However, when you cast your view, your glance upon the philosopher Soloviev, you can, in a sort of comparative way, indicate what we're driving at. You know that Soloviev died at the turning point of the 19th and 20th century. Thus, he's been dead a long time. Western people haven't bothered much with the philosophy of Soloviev. There wasn't much opportunity to become acquainted with it. And what's more, the Western human beings didn't attempt to learn about Soloviev as a mediator of the European East. But let's take a hypothetical situation and imagine that Soloviev did not die 17 years ago, but he lived with this, participated, miterlebt this war. He has experienced, miterlebt, lived together with the Russian experiences. What would he have done precisely as a Russian? Now, one can only answer those things hypothetically. One can have the belief that Soloviev, as a Russian, would have taken all his works, which he had written before the war, and eliminated them, and rewritten all the things. Because he would have realized the necessity of revising precisely his viewpoints. His viewpoints were rooted in the time, the age. Hence, he would have experienced the urge to rewrite everything. He would only have drawn one consequence for himself, which the whole European East has drawn. Now it seems very paradoxical that one should say something like that. Nevertheless, the person who today reads Soloviev reads him best when he makes it clear to himself that Soloviev would have agreed with very few things now which he would have said yes to then. And all that would be a sign for the awakening which can express itself in a fundamental revision of precisely the most significant ideas which have experienced their absurdity in recent years, which have led themselves to ad absurdum. It's true. 2 times 2 equals 4. That would also remain 2 times 2 equals 4. But other things would have to be revised. Only when one has the consequence, one has the consciousness of the necessity for this revision, that one can say that you live in a waking way in our age. The year 1917, which is 38 years after 1879, and 38 years were between 1841 and 1879, in 1917 something important occurs. Because the important thing in the present events is not what was made in 1914, but the important point is that they can come out of that. However, the problem of how one can come out of that, that is the important question. And when one doesn't realize the fact that you can't come out of it with the ancient ideas, that you need new ideas, if you don't realize that, things will go badly. You must realize or accustom yourself to consider and understand new ideas, ideas which you can acquire only by grasping the spiritual world, comprehending the spiritual world. Today I wanted to give you a background for much of what I've said in the last days. You see, one is able to grasp spiritual life in a concrete way. You don't have to fool yourself with all sorts of general platitudes of pantheism and similar worldviews who so love to express themselves, oh yes, there's a spiritual world, and behind the physical there's a spiritual world. All this nebulous talking around of the spirit leads to nothing. One must be able to keep in view, in mind, the definite spiritual events and the spiritual beings who lie behind the threshold. And just as the events that are occurring here upon earth are not general events, but are quite definite events, so in the spiritual world, the events are concrete and definite. I'm perfectly sure that many people today, when they go to sleep and wake up tomorrow morning, they won't say, now I'm going in front of my house door and now I'm coming into the world. They won't say that. But they will have definite ideas of that which they are going to undergo. In a similar way, we have to come to terms with the deeper foundations of mankind and world evolution. When you have to realize, have ideas upon the things that are present in a definite way in beyond the threshold. Not just to point to a generalized spirituality, but to realize we must focus our attention upon definite things. We can be able to perceive and sense very, very much when we are able to look and focus and meditate upon the years 1841 and 1917. But such perception must become life in us if we want to understand what is actually happening. And here we have the end of the lecture.